Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Okay, I want to start tonight here in Washington, D.C., where for the second time in under 1 week, the Supreme Court weighed in on an issue related to Donald Trump. Today, in a unanimous decision, the justices ruled that it is not up to states to bar Trump from their ballots under the 14th Amendment. So he gets to stay on the ballot in Colorado, where the primary is tomorrow. Maine and Illinois can't kick him off either. Now, this decision is significant because the Supreme Court has never had to rule before on whether or not states have the power to disqualify a candidate, even an insurrectionist. But this outcome isn't necessarily surprising, because the moment most legal experts heard the oral arguments, and specifically the back and forth with the justices, most of them predicted the court would not take the step of barring the Republican frontrunner from the ballot, that they would find a way out. And they did. Now, would a different outcome have sent a stronger message that you can't foment an insurrection and be allowed to run for federal office? Yes, it would have. And would it be better for the prospects of President Biden's reelection if Donald Trump got kicked off the ballot, given the fact that he attempted to overturn the last election? Yes. Obviously, the answer there is yes. But the Biden team was never banking on Trump getting booted. I actually asked Biden's deputy campaign manager, Quentin Folks, about the ruling earlier today. And this is what he said.
We don't really care because it's not been the way that we've been planning to beat Donald Trump. Our focus since day one of launching this campaign has been to defeat Donald Trump at the ballot box. And everything we've done since the president announced back in April that he was running for reelection is to build an infrastructure and apparatus to do so.
This is what they, like many of us, expected because of watching those oral arguments and talking to a lot of smart legal experts. But what wasn't expected today was that the majority of the court went further than simply settling whether a state like Colorado can take this action. They said that power is reserved exclusively for Congress. That, quote, the Constitution makes Congress rather than the states responsible for enforcing Section 3 against federal office holders and candidates. Now, by saying Congress is the sole authority here, yes, it means that red states won't be able to just kick Democrats off the ballot willy-nilly, and blue states won't be able to kick Republicans off, you'd think. But it also means that if we have at least one body of Congress that is the same body as the candidate in question, like, say, we do right now, then it seems hard to imagine a scenario where they are going to be barred from the ballot, even if they foment an insurrection. That's a lot of power for an already dysfunctional branch of government. But at the end of the day, what was most interesting to me, and I will talk to a lot of legal experts in the show, here is what the court did not do. Donald Trump seems to think this was a well-crafted decision. His words, not mine. He gave them during a strange midday set of remarks where he bragged about the fact that he won out on the legal argument this time. But here's the thing. The court did not clear him of engaging in an insurrection. Remember, both the Colorado District Court and the Colorado Supreme Court ruled that Trump did, in fact, engage in an insurrection. The state court said his, quote, actions constituted overt, voluntary, and direct participation in the insurrection. A judge in Illinois and the Secretary of State in Maine determined the same thing. And today, by declining to address that issue at all, the Supreme Court let that stand. They could have said otherwise, but they did not. It's not like Trump didn't ask them to. Remember, he argued at length that he did not engage in an insurrection, that in fact, it wasn't an insurrection at all. But the court said nothing about that. And by saying nothing, I think they said a whole lot. So yes, Donald Trump's name may be on the ballot in Colorado and Illinois and Maine, but no, that name was not cleared of an insurrection today. It's important to remember that. I spent all day wondering what Sherrilyn Ivel thinks about all of this. She never holds back. She has lots of brilliant thoughts. She's the former president of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. She's now the Vernon Jordan Distinguished Professor in Civil Rights at Howard Law School. And you've said, we've talked about this case before. You've said, quote, Section 3 was enacted for such a time as this and for such a figure as President Trump. And you've reflected on history, which is so powerful. What was your reaction to the court decision today?
Well, I wasn't surprised, Jen, at the outcome, at the judgment. that we had talked about this before, as you said at the top of the hour, that the court would be looking for an off ramp. I was extremely disappointed in the oral argument, in part because many of the justices seem unprepared. This was a case in which there were many, many amicus briefs that were filed. There were complicated arguments. This was a case in which we don't have a lot to go on in terms of precedent, because fortunately, until 2020, we had not experienced a federal insurrection. So I expected that the court was going to seek an off-ramp, and I thought the off-ramp would be kind of what it was, which is that they were not going to allow one state to remove Trump from the ballot. I think what is disturbing is the overreach. And here I'm going to have to disagree with you a little bit. I hesitate to do so because we're in sync with the Green.
You're a legal expert. I welcome your disagreement, please.
Well, I think I even disagree with other legal experts on this. I am not at all encouraged by the fact that the court did not say something about whether or not Trump, in fact, engaged in insurrection. It was very clear from the argument they had no intention of touching it. They had no intention of reviewing the factual premise of the Colorado Supreme Court's decision, and they seemed even disdainful of involving themselves in the stickiness of the actual factual question as to whether or not Trump had participated in insurrection. But what they did do was that they overreached. And even though this was a unanimous judgment, I think the takeaway from this opinion today is the brawl that is clearly happening on this Supreme Court. We have three justices, Justice Sotomayor, Justice Kagan, and Justice Jackson, who seem to be concurring, but it was a pretty harsh concurrence. This is a case, they said, that cried out for judicial restraint. And they used their concurrence to talk about the failure of this court to exercise restraint. Jen, the court went beyond what they needed to do, not only in terms of President Trump, but remember that they also talked about the need for Congress to pass legislation. They described precisely what the congressional action has to be. Then they described the legislation itself, that it has to be tailored to Section 3. And I think this really outraged the three justices who wrote that concurrence. This was not a question that had been factually developed or even legally developed in this case, because it wasn't at issue in this case, but they reached out to do it. And it's kind of, I think, shocking and important for the three concurring justices to say that they did it in order to insulate, they said, this court and the petitioner, that is President Trump, from future controversy. They also said, the three concurring justices, that that the decision today insulates all alleged insurrectionists from future challenges to their holding federal office. And that's important, Jen, because, you know, there were 10 members of Congress. Actually, one was a representative-elect, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who met with Trump on December 10th. And some of us have been keeping a running list of members of Congress who were involved or believed to have been involved in the plans to overturn the election. Trump is not the only fish in this ocean. And the Supreme Court seemed to go further afield, not only to protect Trump into the future, but also to protect others. And then, of course, there's this concurrence from Amy Coney Barrett, the other conservative on the court, who writes a kind of plaintive, very short concurring opinion, which demonstrates what she clearly had hoped for, was that this court would be unanimous, that the five members would restrain themselves from going further than the three concurring justices wanted to, and that they could have spoken with one voice in a way that, as she would describe it, would bring the temperature down. And it's clear to me that from her concurrence, she was disappointed that the other five conservative justices, the five male conservative justices, somehow were unable to exercise the restraint that might have resulted in a true unanimous judgment and opinion in this case. I think this is very revealing to us about what's going on that court. I think when the historical record is written, when seats are added to the Supreme Court, as they invariably will be, this will be part of the record of what was happening and what even justices on the court were prepared to say is the overreach of the conservatives on this court. So this is a decision that we expected as it relates to Mr. Trump. Yeah. Its overreach is disturbing as it relates to other insurrectionists and as it relates to the court encroaching on what they believe Congress must do. But also it's very revealing about what is going on this Supreme Court. And it's very contentious.
I mean, when you look at how revealing this is, and please disagree with me anytime. I welcome your viewpoints and also I welcome your brilliance. When you look at that and we're looking, because we're all waiting, this immunity case, they're not going to start hearing arguments until April. How do you read? We can't predict what they're going to do, but how do you assess or read this ruling today in terms of how they might approach cases related to Trump moving forward?
Actually, this is why I'm spending so much time parsing the words of the concurring justices, because I think they're speaking in Morse code to us. I think they are telling us something and they're telling us something that is very disturbing, which is that, I mean, when they say it is an attempt to insulate all alleged insurrectionists, that's a pretty loaded thing for fellow justices to say on the court, and that the court attempts to insulate itself and the petitioner from further controversy. So I think this idea of reading the tea leaves as though there's any chance that this court is going to rule in a way that does not allow Mr. Trump to go forward, even the immunity case, obviously they could have decided that case on an expedited basis as they were asked to do by Jack Smith. They didn't do so. They could have left intact the Court of Appeals decision. They didn't do so. Mm-hmm. They've created a schedule that I think is going to make things very, very difficult. And so I think the idea that the Supreme Court is going to be some form of salvation here is not a sound one. We don't have any reason to believe that. But I do think that we should be independently concerned as a matter of democracy about what is breaking down on the United States Supreme Court, and that their actions would be cast in this way by their three colleagues who were united in that assessment of what's going on. And joined not in that in how far that concurrence went, but joined in the disappointment and dissatisfaction by Amy Coney Barrett, who also clearly would have preferred that the court not engage in this kind of overreach that would set off this kind of fracture. That means that she knows that there are legitimacy issues as well as Americans view what the court is doing. So I think that's, for me, the biggest takeaway from this decision today. And I think it's independently alarming, and we should be paying attention to that as well.
Always read the dissent. That is my shorthand summary, and always watch what the court is doing.
The concurrence. It's a concurrence.
The concurrence.
It purports to be a concurrence in this case, so you got to read it all.
You got to read it all. Thank you, Sherrilyn Ifill. Always appreciate having you on and talking to you and hearing your brilliance. Thanks for joining me this evening. And coming up, the Supreme Court shows us that they can move very quickly, as Sherrilyn Ifill was just referencing, when they want to. So why are they dragging their feet on the question of presidential immunity? I'm going to ask conservative attorney George Conway, who actually says the delay of the D.C. trial could be bad news for Donald Trump. We're coming back in just 60 seconds.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Sure does seem like the Supreme Court can move very quickly when they want to help Donald Trump. It also seems like they can move very slowly when they want to help Donald Trump. Consider this. Trump asked the Supreme Court to take up the Colorado ballot case on January 3rd. Today, just 61 days later, he got a ruling, and it was the ruling he wanted. Now, compare that with the court's pace in deciding Trump's claim of absolute immunity from criminal prosecution. Way back in mid-December, and we were just talking about this with Sherrilyn Ifill, special counsel Jack Smith asked the Supreme Court to weigh in on the immunity claim ahead of an appeals court ruling. They refused. The appeals court then ruled, unanimously rejecting Trump's claim of immunity. And last week, the Supreme Court said, you know what? We do want to weigh in after all. And they scheduled the hearing for the week of April 22nd, 7 weeks from now. That will be more than 4 months after Jack Smith first asked them to take the case. 4 months just to get a hearing on the immunity claim, compared to just over 60 days to get to today's ruling that keeps Trump on the ballot. Joining me now is conservative attorney George Conway. He is a contributor to The Atlantic and co-host of the podcast George Conway Explains It All. So I want to dig into all of that, the timing of the Supreme Court, because a lot of us can't figure that out. But we were just talking about the ruling today, and you tweeted today, it doesn't even profess to be interpreting the text.
It doesn't. And I think that's, Professor Eiffel said that there was a lot of overreach in the majority opinion. I think the problem here is that all nine justices underreached. They simply decided that they weren't going to apply the Constitution the way you normally apply it, which is you read the text and you try to figure out what it means in the context of the history and you apply it. And the plain text of the constitutional provision here says that Donald Trump is disqualified. And so that was the real problem with today's decision. And I don't think I don't make much of the concurring opinion's criticism of a majority for having gone too far, because at the end of the day, I can't see where in the majority opinion it does more than say that states can't enforce Section 3 of the 14th Amendment against federal office holders. And, the only difference I can see between that holding and what the four concurring justices, the four women, interestingly, said was that they probably would have restricted it to the president and just the president. But again, there's just no basis, no textual basis, no historical basis
for them
in the
14th
Amendment not to apply it. And the only argument that ever is made in any of the opinions as to why you would restrict states from applying the 14th Amendment, the plain text of the 14th Amendment, the 14th Amendment that contains all sorts of other provisions that apply regardless of whether Congress says, whatever Congress says, including the Equal Protection Clause, which prohibits race discrimination. The fact of the matter is that there's no basis to single out Section 3 as being different from these other provisions. And they're just making it up. And all the justices were making it up.
Why, though? Why? Because, you've studied this court for so long.
Because they were terrified.
Of what? Trump? The reaction?
The reaction. And I think that's clear from Justice Barrett's concurring opinion. I mean, she says all of this stuff she says the quiet part out loud. This is not the time to amplify disagreement with stridency. The court has settled a politically charged case in the volatile season of a presidential election. Particularly in this circumstance, writings of the court should turn the national temperature down, not up. She's terrified. And they all were terrified, including the liberal judges. Okay? The only difference that I can see between what the liberal judges said and what the majority said was they probably would have restricted it to the president. But if they do that, the opinion would have been even worse, because at least it would have been looked like you just cherry picked the president out of a pile to say that the presidency is somehow special from all these other.
And there were other insurrectionists too.
And there are other insurrectionists. I mean, look, the bottom line is they were never, ever going to rule against Trump here, and not because it was Donald Trump, but because of the fear that this court, with only a limited amount of political capital these days, and that's for, we probably disagree on the reasons for that,
but we
agree and disagree on some of it, but they don't have the political capital to all of a sudden drop this ruling on the public and say, Donald Trump can't appear on the ballot. And they were terrified.
But why should they have to worry about political capital? They're the highest court in the land.
They are the highest court in the land, but they are worried about political capital. I mean, this is a court that basically, and you're going to disagree with some of what I'm about to say and agree with someone, that has basically wasted its political capital on things it should have never been involved in. It should have never been involved in abortion, for example. You'll disagree on that. But I say that it was a mistake to get involved the way they did, and even Ruth Bader Ginsburg kind of agrees with me on that. And it was a mistake to get out of it after 50 years, after telling hundreds of millions of women that they had this right. And so they've blown a lot of capital on things that really they shouldn't have been concerned with, because it's not in the Constitution. This provision, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, actually is in the Constitution, and it's clear. And they didn't have to make anything up to apply it. The only rationale that they had for not applying it is to say that, oh, well, you'll get this patchwork. Some states will rule this way. Some states will rule that way. Some states will use different records. Some states will use different procedures. But that shouldn't be the court's problem. That should be the insurrectionist's problem. And this guy, and as you point out, the major takeaway from this case is that Donald Trump remains, because there's nothing in any of these opinions that says otherwise, an adjudicated insurrectionist. He's still that, just as he's already an adjudicated rapist.
George Conway, I love your passion. I love your breakdown and your legal mind. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. I appreciate it. Coming up, Super Tuesday, State of the Union. It's a huge week in the presidential race, and I've got a few thoughts about the freakout over polling and some of the things that deserve way more attention. And later, Congressman Tom Suozzi just won a big special election in New York and taught Democrats some important lessons, some good takeaways. The congressman is going to join me for his first MSNBC interview since he was sworn in. We're back after a quick break. So I know we've said this before, but I promise you, this week is shaping up to be the biggest one yet for the 2024 presidential race. Here's why. Tomorrow is Super Tuesday, when voters in 16 states will cast their ballots. And while he won't secure the total number of delegates needed tomorrow, the night will likely end with Donald Trump taking an insurmountable lead in the nomination process. Then on Thursday, President Joe Biden gives perhaps his biggest speech of the year in the State of the Union, aside from maybe the convention speech. So this really feels like the kickoff of the general election, when voters will begin to decide between Joe Biden and Donald Trump for president. And at this moment, there are some warning signs for the Biden reelection campaign. There have been recent national polls which have Donald Trump leading, four of them, a couple of numbers deeper down that are more problematic. That's all a challenge for the president and his team, no doubt about it. But polls, let's remember, are just a snapshot in time. They're about the moment and a bet on what the electorate will look like. They're worthy of our attention in that respect, but not all of our attention. Because by solely fretting over the polls, we can lose sight of the bigger picture. And that is what is at stake in November. And the contrast between the two candidates voters will have to choose between, that's what it's about. That contrast is stark. On one hand, voters think Joe Biden is old. No argument there. The man is 81. But for those sweating Biden's age and whether he is up to the job, I've got a question for you. What do you think about all this?
Did you just see Maduro, Venezuela? It's unbelievable. Oil exploration and production in the United States. The Biden border well, you know this, right? We will expel the warmongers. We are a nation that just recently heard that Saudi Arabia and Russia will repeat.
I don't even know what that last one said. I mean, you'd rather that guy have access to the nuclear codes? Okay, maybe you're upset about what's happening at the southern border. Absolutely fair. Our country's immigration system is in desperate need of repair. Many aspects of it. Something needs to be done. And something would have been done, by the way, had it not been for Donald Trump. When Joe Biden tried to pass a border security package negotiated, by the way, by one of the most conservative Republicans in the Senate, Donald Trump tanked it. He's not the solution. He's kind of the problem. And he killed that bill, not over policy differences, but so he could continue to campaign on an anti-immigrant fear, promising sprawling detainment camps and echoing the language of Adolf Hitler.
Our country is being poisoned. We're really being poisoned.
And I will not let him turn the USA into a crime-filled, disease-ridden dumping ground. You know, people with terrible, terrible disease that is easily caught, I have to say, they're pouring into our country.
It's all racism and fear-mongering, all of it. And some money for an effective wall on the side, too, of course. That's it. No real solutions. Okay. Maybe you're upset about Joe Biden's handling of Israel's war in Gaza. I get it. There is no question that more needs to be done to put an end to the humanitarian crisis. More aid, it needs to end. But would you prefer the guy who instituted a Muslim ban? Would you prefer the guy who basically gives Netanyahu completely free rein and otherwise has said next to nothing about this crisis? Seriously, this is about as much as he said.
So you have a war that's going on, and you're probably going to have to let this play out. You're probably going to have to let it play out because a lot of people are dying. It should have never started.
Is that the kind of strategic thinking you're looking for? You're looking for her in the Oval Office, in the Situation Room? Okay, maybe it's the economy you're most concerned about on lots of people's minds. That's understandable. The economy is currently has a 3.7% unemployment rate, 3.1% inflation, with a stock market near record highs. I'm asking this sincerely. Can you articulate one thing, just one, that Donald Trump has done or would do to make the economy better or your life better? Okay, while I'm waiting, let's talk about concerns about corruption that you might be basing your choice on. We've heard a lot about corruption. Despite relentless accusations from Donald Trump and Republicans in Congress, they have come up with nothing, zero, to pin on Joe Biden. It is a fever dream. It's meant to muddy the waters and distract from Donald Trump's four criminal indictments, the $500 million he owes for business fraud and sexual assault, and the coup we all watched him attempt in real time. So is this batch of national polls good for Joe Biden? It is not. Not at all. But at this point in the race, I'm not letting them take all of my attention, and neither should Democrats. Joe Biden and Democrats should not be on their heels right now. They can and should play offense on every single issue I just mentioned, not to mention other important issues like reproductive rights and climate change. The policy is on their side. The politics is on their side. And the facts are on their side. Congressman Tom Suozzi just won a crucial special election in New York by playing a whole lot of offense. We love to see it. He's the most recent success story for Democrats, and he joins me after a quick break. Democratic Congressman Tom Suozzi just won a very important special election for George Santos. Yes, that guy. His seat in New York. And in his first speech back on the House floor, he delivered a blunt message about what voters told him during the campaign.
Mr. Speaker, on the night of my election victory, I promised the people of Long Island and Queens I would deliver a simple message to this chamber. Wake up! The people are sick and tired of the finger-pointing and the petty partisan bickering. They want us to work together. Enough with the theater and the drama. Enough with the hyperbole and the histrionics. Enough with the shutdowns and the put-downs. The people aren't paying us to make things worse. The people pay us to be in the solutions business.
And joining me now is Democratic Congressman Tom Suozzi of New York. Congressman, I've been looking forward to talking to you about politics and your race in New York, and we're going to dig into all of that. But I do want to start today just on the news of the day, because the Supreme Court ruled this morning that only Congress, you and your colleagues, can enforce the 14th Amendment, barring anyone who engaged in insurrection from holding federal office. And your colleague, Jamie Raskin, who I know you spent some time with on January 6th, said today he's already working on a bill that could do just that. So if a bill barring Trump from holding office for participating in an insurrection did come up to the floor, would you vote for it?
Well, let me say, I love Jamie Raskin. I respect and admire Jamie Raskin, and anything he crafts, I have to look at and consider very seriously. But, you know, the main thing we need to do is win the election. So that's what my big focus will be.
Let me just put it another way, and I promise we're going to move on to politics, but it's so important for people to understand this. You were there on January 6th. People forget this. Do you think Trump engaged in an insurrection?
Well, I was one of the last people in the chamber that day, and this was not tourists looking at the Capitol. I was there when people were you know, the door the president walks through when they say, ladies and gentlemen, the president of the United States of America for the State of the Union. There were people breaking that glass using some carbon fired pistons. Pop, pop, pop. We thought those were gunshots. It was terrifying. We didn't know which way to leave the chamber. We were stuck. There were about 20 of us stuck up in the gallery for an extra 15 minutes while people were outside banging on the doors. I went back to the Capitol that night and saw the broken glass and the broken furniture and the canisters of the liquid on the floor from the smoke. And it was terrifying. So it was definitely an insurrection. It was definitely a riot. Whether the president instigated or not as a legal matter, I'm not going to try and opine on. I just know that the president said a lot of things that pissed a lot of people off and got them pretty excited.
I want to ask you, there are so many things I want to ask you about politics. There's so many lessons from your race that I think Democrats can apply. Instead of running away from the immigration issue, you directly ran into it, literally showing up at your opponent's event. It remains front and center as we look ahead to November, as you well know. So what should Democrats be doing to go on offense on this issue that they're behind nationally and in a lot of states and districts on?
Well, the first thing we need to do is listen to the voters. I mean, the voters are very concerned about the chaos at the border. We can't ignore. We're supposed to be representatives. You have to represent the people, which means you have to listen to what the people are saying. And people are very upset about the chaos at the border. I'm very progressive when it comes to immigration. My father was an immigrant, came from Italy as a young boy. When I was the mayor of my hometown, Glen Cove, I started the first day worker shape-up center anywhere on the East Coast of the United States of America back in 1994, because the federal government back then had failed to address the immigration crisis. And it's just gotten worse year after year after year. But Democrats have to be willing to talk about what the people care about. And what we need to lean into is that there is a comprehensive bipartisan compromise that was initiated in the Senate that solves this problem. And if we go along with it and the president goes along with it and some of the Republicans in the Senate go along with it, well, who's not going along with it and why? When the Wall Street Journal says this is a good compromise, when the U.S. Chamber of Commerce says this is a good compromise, when the Border Patrol Union president, who's a big Trumper, said this is a good idea, why are we not even putting it on the floor for a vote? Because Donald Trump said, I don't want to give a victory to Joe Biden. I want to run on the chaos. Well, that's completely irresponsible and cynical and the worst part of politics. So we need to lean into this issue.
No,
we need to
ahead.
Lean
go
into
ahead,
this issue. We need to lean into this issue and talk about the bipartisan compromise that exists already. We need to take this issue, make it our own, propose this moderate bipartisan solution. If the Republicans finally go along, great, we'll move the country forward. If they don't go along, we and the president and everyone else can say, are you just playing politics? Are you just trying to weaponize this issue for political purposes? The American people will see right through that.
Let me ask you about in 2022, as you are very familiar, the New York House races swung control of Congress, and not in a good way. Not in a good way. And Democratic candidates, and I spent some time up there with some candidates, were absolutely pummeled, as you know, on immigration, but also on crime. You also ran directly into that issue. Talk to me about crime and how Democrats should be talking about that issue, specifically in New York, where there are a lot of competitive races coming up this fall.
I think whether it's immigration or crime or the cost of living or other issues that are out there related to national security, you know, Israel, Gaza, Ukraine, whatever the issues are that people are talking about, reproductive freedom, whatever the issue people are talking about, we need to talk to the people about what our proposals are. We can't ignore the issues that people are talking about. As I said earlier, we're supposed to be representatives. We need to represent the people. I don't forget which president it was years ago that said the best politician is the one that says what the people are already thinking. So people are fed up with the finger pointing and the partisan bickering. They want us to work together. And we don't need to just pander to our base. We can't, don't need to be bullied by our base. And I said in my my swearing in speech, we need to look at the problems, listen to the people, and propose reasonable solutions.
Congressman Tom Suozzi, that sounds very reasonable. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. And that was a perfect tee up, because coming up next, we have a big exclusive announcement about the nation's largest organization dedicated to electing Democratic pro-choice women. We're going to unveil the new
time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley, in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
President of Emily's List, live right here when we come back. If there's one thing I've learned throughout my career, it's that political campaigns are all about very simple, very clear messages. So here's one for you. Donald Trump killed Roe v. Wade, and he brags about it. And that opened the door to what we saw recently in Alabama, when a ruling by the state Supreme Court forced hospitals to pause IVF treatment. And if you think this is going to stop there, you're wrong. Republicans might be shouting support for IVF from the rooftops, a little late, by the way, but a majority of the House Republican caucus has signed on to a bill that would basically nationalize the Alabama ruling. Last week, 145 Republicans in Congress also filed an amicus brief asking the Supreme Court to restrict access to the abortion drug mifepristone. And in just a few weeks, the Supreme Court is going to hear a case on whether that drug should be banned nationwide. They are telling us exactly what they intend to do. And in this election, perhaps more than ever before, it will be important for candidates to make that message as clear as they possibly can. That's the goal of organizations like Emily's List, which is working tirelessly to help elect Democratic pro-choice women to office, up and down the ballot. That's important, too. In 2020, they helped elect nearly 500 candidates to local, state, gubernatorial, and federal offices. But the stakes have never been higher than they are this year. Joining me now is Jessica Mackler. She's been the interim president of Emily's List since the former president, LaFonsa Butler, was appointed to the U.S. Senate. And she has spent her career working to elect Democrats for years. One of the smartest strategic brains I know, and I know a lot of them, and a true political force. And we have some very exciting news to announce right now. We can say for the first time that Jessica Mackler is the new official president of Emily's List. Jessica, thank you for joining us tonight. Congratulations. How do you feel?
It's amazing. I mean, I'm so honored to have been chosen by this board to be its fourth president. It's a real, honestly, a real full circle moment for me because I actually started my career at Emily's List.
Yeah.
I was an intern and then later a staffer, and I got to travel all over the country working for candidates like Congresswoman Gwen Moore. I spent all of this time on the ground in Milwaukee. And it really grounded my career in this idea that I understood the barriers that women face when they run for office, what it takes, the added barriers women, especially women of color, face when they run for office, and what it takes, what an organization like Emily's List can do to get over those barriers and overcome them. But it was also not just the mission, but the ethos of Emily's List. It's this idea that we can stand in the gap, take on these really tough fights. I've carried that with me. I've never shied away from a tough fight, and that's because of Emily's List. But also because we get to see the difference that these women make. Like, what does it actually mean when we elect these women to office?
So women like me and many watching would love to see more women in office. What is your goal? What are you trying to achieve this November?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we say every year, this is the most important election of our lives, but I don't think it takes much convincing for people to believe that this actually is the most important election of our lives. We have so much at stake, democracy, abortion rights. For us, that is electing, building on the success of Emily's List, electing Democratic pro-choice women up and down the ticket. That's re-electing Kamala Harris and the Biden-Harris ticket. That's holding the United States Senate, so many Emily's List women on the ballot this year in the Senate. It's flipping the United States House, securing state legislative majorities. And all of that is important because we know that Republicans are going to have this fight at all levels in trying to strip us of our rights. And so we're going to be doing that. But when I zoom out and I think about, okay, that's what's on the ballot this year, and I think about the future of Emily's List, what I really love about it is that it's always been about collective power. It's been about how everybody can come together in this community and do what we can, and we can really change the dynamics for these women candidates. And so that's what I'm really excited
about. That's a huge thing. So you have walked me off of the ledge. You know so much about research, politics, polling on this. You're going to help walk our viewers off the ledge.
Because I'm here for you.
There's been a lot of polls lately on abortion rights that are surprising, I think, to a lot of people, including me. In a recent CBS poll, only 33% blame Trump for Roe being overturned, but nearly half of voters polled say they neither give him credit nor blame him for overturning Roe. That is such a key issue. What do you do about that? Do you believe those numbers? And what do you do about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you said this earlier, right? So first, these polls are a snapshot in time. And it's early for those of us who live and breathe this every day. You know, it's hard to remember. But voters are just keying into this. They're not really going to key in until much later. So that's one thing. But I think the most important thing is that we have to put this in front of voters. Donald Trump has said on camera that he's taken responsibility for overturning Roe versus Wade. He has said that he will adopt a national abortion ban. And so it's on Emily's list to make sure that we're putting that in front of voters every single day between now and Election Day, showing them the tape and making sure that we're consistently delivering this message. And what we've seen over the past several years is that when we do that, it really works.
Show them the tape. That's good. We need T-shirts. Okay, let me ask you, the other piece that I get asked about a lot, and I'm sure you do, is young voters, voters who may not be thrilled at this moment about the top of the ticket, but may be excited about abortion rights and protecting them. We've seen that in special elections. Surge voters, I know you call them. How many of them are there? Can we rely on them for this election?
Well, I will tell you, young voters, young women in particular, have an opportunity to be a huge difference maker in this election. I mean, we saw this when you look back at Michigan in the last election cycle. Abortion was on the ballot. Young voters turned out more than double digits over the national average of their turnout. And so we've seen that happen. I would say this works when we do the work. Mm-hmm. We really have to consistently show voters, young voters in particular, what is at stake in this election cycle. But when we do that, we see that it continues to be a driver. We've seen that in Virginia. We've seen that in Ohio. And we've really seen it consistently that when we are telling people what's at stake, when we're talking about the fact that Republicans are not going to stop at Roe v. Wade, that they are going to continue to work to take away our freedoms, that they're going to continue to work to control and decide who gets to make these choices, and Democrats are going to stand up for restoring our rights and protecting these freedoms, that they will show up for us.
Jessica Mackler, show them the tape. So many important takeaways. Thank you for walking me and others off the ledge. You have a lot on your shoulders. Thank you for taking this on, and congratulations
for you
on your new role. Coming up, a sneak preview of my conversation with my old boss, John Kerry, as he plans to depart the Biden administration later this week. He had a lot to say, and he didn't hold back. We'll be right back. This week, my old boss, John Kerry, is stepping down from his latest public service role as Special Presidential Envoy for Climate. I sat down with him today for his exit interview. During our conversation, we talked about the importance of fighting back against disinformation, whether it's in the fight against climate change or in our domestic politics. I want to play part of it, what he said, because it's really stuck with me all day.
Well, if you lose the truth as the centerpiece of decision making and of aspirations in a country, you've lost democracy. You have to have truth. And we don't have the same arbiters, the same referees that we used to have in our political structure. You know, first of all, politicians are not the best validators anymore in our country.
Because of distrust?
Because of distrust, because it all seems to sound the same, mm-hmm. because people don't seem to see enough progress in different areas that they'd like to see progress, because there's gridlock after gridlock, budget after budget doesn't pass. People are looking at that and saying, this isn't working very well. And mind you, and I think you know this, in other countries, particularly countries that aren't that friendly, this is being exploited.
Some serious food for thought there from somebody who ran for president and has seen firsthand the impact of disinfo in authoritarian countries. And we're going to air the full exit interview this Sunday at 12 p.m. Eastern. That does it for me tonight, but there's a very busy week ahead. Be sure to tune in tomorrow night for a big night of Super Tuesday coverage.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.